Drive Time on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Zurich. For pensions, protection, savings and investments. At Zurich, we deal in peace of mind.
Now, former MP MEP Claire Daly is currently attending a pro-Palestinian event in Sana'a in Yemen, organised by the Houthis. Pictures from the event showed a hall adorned with pictures and quotes of dead pro-Iranian leaders, including Iranian Supreme Leader Khomeini, and the Houthi slogan, "Allah is the greatest, death to America, death to Israel, and curse upon the Jews, victory to Islam," that adorns one of the walls. Well, just before coming on air, I spoke with Claire Daly from Yemen and I first asked her what the conference was about.
Okay, I'm in Sana'a, the capital of Yemen, and I'm here because I was invited to attend the third national conference on solidarity with Palestine. It's a huge issue in Yemeni society. It's a gathering of academics and people from Yemeni society to discuss the best way forward for how they can assist the Palestinian struggle. I mean, every Friday here, there are a million people out on the streets in support of Palestine, and the conference was really to highlight that and discuss the best way forward. So that's how we ended up here.
Exactly. And can I ask you who paid for this trip?
Well, like any, I was invited to attend as a speaker at the conference, so they paid our travel and accommodation. That's absolutely normal. I've organised multiple events in the European Parliament and had to pay for speakers there, but we weren't paid for it or anything like that. They paid our travel and accommodation as we were guest speakers. But that's no different than anywhere else. I'm going to the European Parliament next week or the week after, and they'll be paying for it as well. It's normal protocol in any of these events.
Before we get to the conference then, I think you were also at the site of the bombings in Yemen, very high profile bombings now because of the controversy that's erupted in the United States about the conversations that happened in advance. Can you tell me what you saw there?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, on Sunday night here, there was a bomb on a residential district just outside of Sana'a. We went to visit the site. It was a very tragic scene, just a residential building in the middle of an ordinary street, shops, houses, that's all it was. And a building right in the middle of two other buildings was literally obliterated. I mean, we know that 5 people were killed and maybe 10 to 15 injured. And just to see a building that had been there less than 12 hours before with practically nothing left. I mean, these are families who were celebrating Ramadan. They were all having the Ramadan food. And at the end of that, then this happens. Really shocking.
I know that the Houthis have also been firing missiles into Israel, and the US would no doubt say that this is part of retaliation for that and also what's been happening in the Red Sea.
Yeah, I mean, the Houthi actions in the Red Sea have been very much anchored in support and solidarity with Palestine. They've targeted commercial vehicles on the way to Israel, basically those ships which are enabling the continuation of the genocide, and they see it as very much a tactic in upholding international law under the Geneva Convention, where the responsibility on all signatories is not just to not commit genocide, but to prevent others who are doing it from doing it. So that's, and they see the action very much in that way. I mean, they ceased the operations in the Red Sea when the ceasefire held, but now, of course, we know the Israelis have broken the ceasefire. We're on day 23 of the starvation continuing, the blocking of humanitarian aid and the assault continuing on Gaza. So, yeah, that's, you know, and when we think about what the US have done, I mean, everybody has probably read now the signal messages between the national security advisors who were literally planning this attack. They said in it they knew nothing about the Houthis. They said that they were no threat to any US interests, just to the commercial interests of mainly European vessels. And, you know, it will be what they've done here is really like if the Mexicans had decided to bomb some houses in Texas because they said, you know, Argentina was being undermined economically. I mean, this is barbarism. It's completely outside of international law. It's actually a war crime. They had killed 53 people here only a couple of days before we got there in a major attack on Sana'a in the Sadr district. There are nightly bombings going on and Hodeida around the port. There are nightly bombings going on. And I mean, the area that we saw and we were in and the other areas in Sana'a, like these are residential areas. There was a cancer hospital in Sadr, which I believe has been bombed twice now. as well. These are ordinary people, and it seems like humanity is getting to a stage whereby targeting civilians has become normalised. And I think that's part of what the Yemeni forces are saying, is that if what's happening in Gaza is allowed to happen, well then everybody is potentially a target, because we're talking about might is right and no rules whatsoever.
Okay, but what the Houthis have done in terms of their attacks on the commercial ships, they did initially say they were attacking ships connected with Israel, but many of the vessels that they've attacked don't have connection with Israel. They've sunk two vessels and they've also killed four innocent crew members.
Well, I believe that a number of crew members were killed. That wasn't the intention. Clearly, the intention is to deter commercial vehicles and to prevent them enabling the continuation of the genocide. Obviously, any loss of life is tragic, but we have to see it in the context of the loss of tens of thousands of Palestinian children, hundreds of thousands probably at this stage in Gaza, who've lost their lives or been seriously disabled, not to mind the whole society being obliterated. And their position is, from my mind, one entirely in keeping with international law.
And you can't fire missiles at commercial ships and be entirely in keeping with international law.
You can absolutely say that it is reprehensible for anybody to participate in a genocide. And the convention is very clear. The obligation is on the signatories to prevent genocide from taking place.
Can I ask you about the conference? And you say the best way forward for Palestine is being discussed at that conference, and potential solutions are being discussed. What solutions were being put forward?
Absolutely everything. They discussed the movement of the young people in the US, the need for international solidarity across all countries. Many, many different tactics really were discussed along the lines of what we would discuss in Ireland: boycott, divest, sanction.
There were lots of interesting people there. Among the main speakers were high-ranking Houthi official Abdelaziz bin Habtour, a former Iraqi Prime Minister Adel Abdel Mahdi, and Abu Shamala. And all of them lauded Hamas's October 7th attacks and commended the Houthis for aiding Hamas. Did you hear much of that at the conference, people lauding the October 7th attacks?
No, not really. It was mainly dealing with the what followed next, which was obviously in terms of proportionate response, entirely disproportionate.
Okay, but when you say no, not really, obviously there were people lauding the October 7th attacks.
It wasn't a theme, really. It was about how to stop the genocide now. I mean, it's no secret that the Houthis would support Hamas. They are part of the axis of resistance, and they claim very strong solidarity in terms of their opposition to the settler colonial project of Israel, and they have that affinity there. That's very understandable and not surprising, but it was in no way a sectarian gathering or anything like that. It was very much a solidarity gathering with the people of Palestine, well, and the impact of what's going on over there, and how we as human beings in a world society that's supposed to be governed by a system of international law are standing by in the face of, you know, judgments by the ICJ, by the ICC, and they're being blatantly ignored. And that Western powers who, you know, dictate to other countries about their human rights and so on, are they're not just doing nothing, which actually is illegal. They're enabling it at every turn without the West and the US and Europe. This would never have started, and it certainly would be over in days, and we have to deal with that reality.
Hold on, when you say without the US and Europe this would never have started, I mean, 1,200 people were killed on October 7th when Hamas entered Israel.
They were, and many thousands of people have been killed before that in previous Israeli atrocities also. But in those lesser responses and in previous years, the likes of even Thatcher and Reagan imposed arms embargoes.
It wasn't sectarian, but there was a number of pictures and slogans on the wall, and one of them was the Houthi slogan, which read, "Allah is the greatest, death to America, death to Israel, a curse upon Jews, victory to Islam." That was covering one of the walls. That's sectarian. It's anti-Semitic.
That is the Houthi slogan, you know, but I didn't meet anybody who was opposed to Jewish people or had any problem with Jewish people. In fact, they were lauding the Jewish activists who were firmly in the anti-Zionist camp. And when I say it wasn't sectarian, what I mean is it was very much done on the basis of that we have lived in this region as Arabs and as Jews and as neighbours for millennia. And we need to go back to those times that imposing a settler colonial project in this area, which has destabilised the entire region and made it unsafe for others, is not the way forward. And that's what I mean by non-sectarian.
Claire, I don't know.
Absolutely rooted
I think that way.
Can
I put it to you that if I walked into a conference that had a slogan on the wall saying "A curse upon Jews, death to Israel," I would walk back out again.
Well, I think you have to see it in the context of the region that these people live in and the decades of repression that they have received and being at the receiving end from Western intervention and from Israel also. And it's rooted in that. That's the meaning of that, if you like. It's not anti-Semitic in its implications or in the day-to-day interaction with people. And I think that was very evident in the content of the papers and the academic papers that people presented at the conference. It wasn't, the impression has been given here that this was somehow some sort of a big rally of Islamist forces or something. It was not that. Obviously, the government in this area is run by the Houthis. That is their administration. They are Islamists. They are Muslims. And that is their ideology. But I certainly didn't hear anybody calling for Jews to be killed. I certainly did hear them calling for death to Israel and America. And by that, they mean the dismantlement of the Zionist state of Israel. And they mean the dismantlement of American empire interfering around the world. I mean, they hosted Americans. There were Jews in attendance. It's the phraseology of the area that we are in at the moment. And looking at it through a Western lens can be uncomfortable, but the content and the demeanour and the interaction of the people here wasn't in any way of that nature. It was very much in keeping with any meeting of solidarity in Palestine that we would see in Europe, except that these people have been prepared to take direct action and defend innocent lives in Palestine with their own.
I don't think you would see a meeting in Europe at which there would be a number of main speakers present who had lauded the attack on October 7th of 1,200 innocent people, and where there were slogans on the wall saying "A curse upon Jews and death to Israel," and where there are pictures on the wall of Hezbollah leader Hasan Nasrallah, of Yahya Sinwar, who was one of the masterminds of the October 7th attacks, one of the Hamas leaders, another Hamas leader, Ismail Haniyeh, and then to turn around and say that this wasn't...
They also had pictures of hundreds of young men who have died in the past conflict over the past 10 years in this area, people who have died in defence of Palestine in Lebanon and in other countries, and that for them is a struggle for liberation. And of course you wouldn't see those slogans in Europe, because our experience in Europe has been largely one of being the colonizers and the imperialists. We haven't been subjected to what these people have been subjected to. And I think their humanity and their tolerance and their sacrifice for the innocent people of Palestine is something that should make us in Europe
prepared to defend
Palestine with their lives.
Where was the humanity in the October 7th attacks? People were murdered in
their
beds.
Don't know the full nature of what happened.
Well, we know 1,200 people died, including children. And we know hundreds of people were taken hostages and innocent people taken hostages and kept as hostages for the last 16 months.
The loss of civilian life is regrettable everywhere. But we're talking about wars and destabilizing. That's what happens in these situations. These people would claim that they were defending themselves. What Israel has done subsequently is completely against international law as the occupying power.
I think we're deviating here from the real issue.
We live in countries where we have an obligation.
Has deviated from international law. I'm not arguing about what's happened since October 7th. I'm talking about the people that you were associating with at this conference and what their beliefs are,
well,
which were written for
meeting.
You to see on the walls.
Their
beliefs are curse to Jews, death to Israel, death to America, Allah is the greatest, October 7th attack was a great attack, something to be lauded. That's their views. Are they your views?
I was at a meeting. You know, well, those are not my views. I was at a meeting in the European Parliament on the 8th of October where senior officials in the European Union who are based in the area made a very clear statement that The only surprise to them that October the 7th happened was the scale of it, because it was very obvious in advance to that attack that the assault of the Israelis on Al-Aqsa Mosque, the intimidation by the settlers had massively escalated. They had warned the situation, and it was a reaction to the actions which had been taken by Israel beforehand. Now, they were senior EU people who were present in the area saying that at a meeting of the Security and Defence Committee. So they know well that what happened on October the 7th was a reaction to previous actions.
Yeah, and I understand that there was a context to October 7th.
I mourn the loss of any...
I understand there's a context to October 7th.
We can't just say, well, I understand, and then we let those who try to do something about it. It's very sad that 4 people lost their lives in the attacks on the ships, but in the context of the loss of civilian lives of women, children, doctors, journalists, every piece of civilian infrastructure, the scale of it really, the disproportionality coming here is that the real violence is being carried out by Israel, enabled by the West, Europe, and the US in particular. And without that, when the ceasefire happened, there were no actions taken by the Houthis in doing anything. So this is, if you like, a defensive mechanism towards defending the Palestinian people and trying to help end the genocide. And I think their actions very clearly show that. What's going on in this country where I am now is that these people are the victims of American terrorism, that civilians have been murdered in their homes by US warplanes. The manner in which we saw discussed through their signal messages, where they called it an amazing job, a good start. Ordinary people who have been the victims of this, not just now, but for decades.
Can I ask you about one of the statements that you made during the press conference? You said the Zionist state of Israel is over. What did you mean by that?
I think they've shown by their actions and their brutality that they have nothing else to rely on anymore. And I think, crucially, they've lost the hearts and minds of people everywhere, but particularly amongst the Jewish population, and significantly amongst the Jewish population in America, large numbers also in Germany and other places, that they cannot maintain themselves further because Zionism has been exposed as the apartheid state that it has been designated as.
So that
can't continue.
Clarity,
a bit like
are you
South African.
The state of Israel is over, or is it the government that you're talking about?
In its Zionist form, absolutely, yeah.
I just want a clarity from you about what the state of Israel looks like after the Zionist state is gone, as you see it. What does that look like? What do you mean by that?
Well, for me, I mean, it would be one where everybody equal rights for all, a little bit like what happened after the dismantlement of South African. After apartheid in South Africa. I think the idea of a two-state solution now has passed. Too much has happened since then.
So
and
it's
I think
a one-state solution
with equal rights for
where they're all living together and working together is
where
what
people
you
live
see.
Together. Exactly.
Sorry, very finally, Claire, can I ask you about the previous trips that you've been on, which have caused some controversy, and people will say this latest trip just adds up to paint a picture. Previous trips, for example, one in Iraq in 2021, you went there with Mick Wiles to criticise American foreign policy in the region, but then footage of that was used in a YouTube video to promote the group.
The group I was met were a group that had no involvement in anything like that. I make many trips. I was in the US State Department last year. I've been in Germany earlier this year. I've been in Sweden. I've been in Norway. I've been in Pakistan. I've been in many countries. It was part of my job as a member of the European Parliament, and through my stance in the European Parliament in advocating for rights for Palestine in particular, I've become very well known around the world. I've had many high-profile American supporters, from Hollywood actresses and the likes, for my stance globally, and that's no different in Western Asia or other areas either. Those people do get access to social media. They know what people are saying, and they have a respect for the stance that I took on Palestine. So I went on my holidays last year to Nashville. I've been to many different places. So what? Like, these countries are part of humanity, and if we don't go and engage with people and exchange views, how can we ever live in a civilized world where everybody gets on with each other and respects their different views?
Claire Daly, we'll leave it there, and thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks very much, Sarah.